With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hi, everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Chris Canty.
What's up, man?
Chris Carter. What's happening right here is Nick Wright. Happy Halloween. You have kids? Do you have kids?
No kids, but I know I'm going to have a ton of trick-or-treaters this afternoon.
I went
out yesterday and bought like $150 worth of candy.
Was that necessary?
Well, of course, it is, because I got to be that guy.
Well, you're that big guy. Do you give the big king size, or you still go little minis?
Well, I go the minis, but I let the kids get a handful of candy.
Yeah, look at your hand. You must have been a disaster as a kid.
He's a good guy. And by the way, in honor of the World Series, we go to our number one reliever, Chris Canty. Thank you so much for coming in today, brother.
Sometimes the best ability is availability.
Appreciate you.
100%. I get. All right, well, it was a nightmare for the Warrior fans last night when they learned Steph Curry broke his hand. Joel Embiid and Karl Anthony Towns gave us a trick and a treat. And sticking with the theme, we start with an autumn night in Houston. Nationals and Astros in a winner-take-all World Series game. Game 7, Zach Greinke was cruising on the hill for the Astros through six innings of work. And then old reliable Anthony Rendon took the plate, going yard for the solo shot to pull the Nationals within one run. Still in the seventh, they pull Greinke, they put in Will Harris. And Howie Kendrick says, hey, thanks for the pitching change. Hits a two-run home run. Washington takes the 3-2 lead. Two RBI singles later would make it 6-2, and Nats pitcher Daniel Hudson would do the rest. Michael Brantley at the plate, Michael Brantley striking out, bottom nine, sealing it. The Washington Nationals win their first ever World Series title. Two great teams, one great series, 100 bottles of champagne. All right, Nick, there is a lot to unpack with this one. It was a great series, great game to end it all. What did you make of last night's Game 7 win for the
Congratulations
Nats?
To the Nationals, a team that famously started 19-31 over the first 50, and over the last 112, three teams were tied for the best record in baseball. The Astros, who a lot of people picked to go to the World Series, the Dodgers, who a lot of people picked to play them in the World Series, and the Washington Nationals. One of the best teams in baseball of the final two-thirds of the season. They get there and then get it done. Because it's baseball and because it was a close game late, you, of course, are going to have some managerial second guessing.
Mm-hmm.
And in all sports, my number one maxim when it comes to coaching or managing is, if I were running a team, I would say, what does the opposition hope I do? Let's not do that. Let's start from a premise of, what is the opposing team hoping I do? And if I were the Washington Nationals last night, I was hoping they took out Zach Greinke.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that they, no matter how effective Will Harris has been, no matter how rested you feel the bullpen has been, no matter what you think the strength of your team
is. Even if you have Gerrit Cole sitting there, whether you want to bring him in or not.
Absolutely. Even Gerrit Cole, because you know you're probably, if you are going to bring in Gerrit Cole, it's not going to be mid-inning. It's going to be at the beginning
of an
inning.
Yes.
So he can have a clean inning. And it's not as Zach going into that seventh inning had given up one hit and one walk. In the seventh inning, gives up the solo home run, but then the next batter, there's a 2-1 count. He throws strike two.
Mm.
It's called ball three. It was maybe the worst call of the night by a home plate ump. And Canty, then I think that Zach gives in, doesn't want to give him an easy pitch.
Yeah.
So he walks him, and you pull him from the game. I'm not saying that the Nationals couldn't have won otherwise. I'm saying pulling Zach Greinke there was a relief to the Nationals dugout and the Nationals clubhouse, and they immediately responded by taking a lead they would not relinquish.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Up until that point, Zach Greinke was lights out. I mean, he had only allowed two base runners before he got into that seventh inning.
Yep.
And oh, by the way, in 6 1/3, he only used 80 pitches, so he was incredibly efficient. So, I mean, when you look at this Houston Astros team, they're built by starting pitching in their lineup being able to manufacture offense a lot of different ways, whether it's home runs or whether it's just putting the barrel of the bat on the ball in hard contact and putting runners on base. But the fact is, they weren't able to come up with a big hit last night, but Zach Greinke was keeping the game close and giving them more opportunities to. But once you go to that Astros bullpen, it gets dicey. I mean, they showed up in the Yankee series in the CS, and they were lights out. But we know that the Astros bullpen is the weakness of this team. And when you put it up against what the Washington Nationals have done throughout the end, throughout the playoffs and toward the end of the regular season, this has been one of the best lineups in terms of being scrappy and being able to have productive outs, professional at-bats, being able to move guys over, even if it's bunting guys over, being aggressive on the bases, steal opportunities, all of those different things. We know the Washington Nationals can do that. So you would rather have Zach Greinke on the mound, a guy that has shown and proven that he can handle those types of situations, rather than going to Will Harris. The bullpen is the weakness of your team.
Plus, Will Harris was a little shaky the night before as well.
Exactly. I don't know why you would put him out in that situation and have the potential for him to get exposed.
And by the way, no matter how strong your bullpen is, and you're right, it's the weakness of their team, by the seventh game of any series, your bullpen's going to be weaker than it was at the beginning. Not just because if it's tired or not, but the opposing team now for a week and a half has seen these guys repeatedly. The one part of this that is not managerial second guessing, and you mentioned it before the show, and this is what always happens. If it's a close game, we pick on the manager. And I think AJ Hinch made a mistake, but this didn't have to be a close game. You mentioned before the show how many opportunities. Max Scherzer, his stat line might be good, but he was dancing through the raindrops all night long. How many opportunities the Astros had to turn a two-run lead into, I don't know, a four-run lead, a five-run lead, which obviously dramatically would have changed the match.
Yeah, they had plenty of chances to blow the game open. I mean, Max Scherzer had multiple base runners in four of the five innings that he pitched. I mean, in the second inning, he gives up the home run to Yuli Gurriel, but then he's got runners on second and third. He ends up getting Springer to line out to left field. Then he has runners on first and second in the third and the fourth, and he's able to get flyouts to center field. And then he's got runners on first and third again in the fifth and strikes out Chirino. So Max Scherzer didn't have his best stuff, but he was able to make pitches when he needed to. But you also have to look at the flip side of that. In the Astros lineup, couldn't come up with the big hit when they needed to. They were 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position going up against Max Scherzer. You have to be able to capitalize when you get Max Scherzer on the ropes like that, and they didn't do it.
And you said it, Nick. Everyone thought the Astros were going to be here. No one thought, really, the Nationals were going to be here. Five elimination games in the postseason, five wins for a team that was 19-31 back in May. When Max Scherzer was on the trade block back in May, we were talking about where he was going to go. For what they were able to put together from May forward, I mean, they were so sort of neck and neck with the Astros the whole way. There was a graphic that went up on the game last night, how many runs they both scored, how many wins they both had. I mean, what can you say about what this team was able to put together without Bryce Harper, with all the negativity, and with the way they started the season?
Well, there's something to be said for momentum in sports, whether you're talking about baseball, football, or basketball. The team that's playing the best at the end of the regular season gives themselves a distinct advantage once you get into the postseason, and you saw the Nationals were able to ride that wave. I mean, they're 3-0 in elimination games during this postseason, first team in baseball to have ever done that. They were down late in that wild card game against the Brewers, found a way to win. They were down in that Dodgers series, found a way to win. And then, of course, they sweep the CS, and they're waiting for the winner of the Astros-Yankees. But the fact that this team had been playing so well once we got to the postseason, I think there's something to be said for that. They caught that proverbial lightning in a bottle, and they rode that all the way to a championship.
And my hometown Kansas City Royals were a big part of the revolution of, hey, how much does starting pitching actually matter? Build these brilliant bullpens, try to basically reverse engineer a win from the ninth inning forward. The Washington Nationals, they needed not 11, they needed 12 wins to win a World Series this year because they played in that wild card game. They got 10 Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer starts. They were 10-0 in those 10 starts. They were 2-5 in the other seven games they played. They might have gotten here because the team as a whole was playing great over the final two-thirds of the season. Once they got to the postseason, they had a future first ballot Hall of Famer in Scherzer, take care of business, and a guy who now is on, we'll see how his career moves forward, but Strasburg, number one overall pick, a guy there was controversy surrounding him about shutting him down years ago before the postseason, a guy with all this potential. This was one of the greatest playoff runs any pitcher has ever had. He wins World Series MVP. He has the third lowest World Series ERA ever, and he is the first pitcher to ever be 5-0 in one postseason. 10 wins from 10 starts out of Scherzer and Strasburg. That's why the Nationals are World Series champions.
And to your point, Steven Strasburg, the first number one overall pick to win World Series MVP. Yeah,
so I didn't know that.
Exactly.
And then on the flip side, you talk about how important pitching is. You saw what Verlander was not able to give you for the Astros.
And right, I wonder where Garrett Cole's going to go.
And Garrett Cole as well. Yeah. Washington Nationals are your World Series champions. On to the Warriors now. New season, new arena, and new problems for the defending Western Conference champs. Two-time MVP Steph Curry suffered a broken hand in the team's loss to the Suns last night. Curry will have a CT scan to determine if surgery is the next step, but a timetable for his return is not yet set. Regardless, it is not good for a Warriors team with just one win on the season. Nick, what was your reaction to Curry's broken hand and where the Warriors are now?
All right, so multitude of reactions. First one, totally preventable play. Chris Carter laughs when I say this, but this is why trying to take that weak side charge is a dangerous play that should be eliminated from basketball. Aaron Baines, a foot is 7 inches taller than Steph Curry, 80 pounds heavier. Go up and contest or get out the way, because this is what can happen. I've been saying this for 3 years. The worst thing in basketball is these big guys trying to come over, take these weak side charges instead of going up and playing defense, because it's dangerous for both players. Now, one of our best players in the league is sidelined. Some injuries you can't prevent. This is preventable, but everybody takes these damn weak side charges. All right, I'm off my high horse on that.
Now to
the actual impact.
Okay.
For the Warriors, you can argue it's a blessing in disguise. For the Warriors, that team's not going to be great this year anyway. They now are going to have a higher draft pick. Steph, after five straight trips to the NBA Finals, five straight 100-ish game seasons, a little less because he's missed some time due to injury, but five straight very long seasons, he can recuperate, rest. They can maybe up D'Angelo Russell's trade value as far as featuring him. So for the Warriors, aside from the people who paid a few million dollars for the PSLs in their new Chase Center in San Francisco, this is not devastating, it's just disappointing. For Stephen Curry, Chris, I find this very, very disappointing. Not just because he's going to miss time, but he's going to miss an opportunity. Mm. He's going to miss the opportunity that LeBron James had a couple years ago, the year Kyrie left. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew that Cavs team couldn't win the title, but we were able to see LeBron as a one-man show, and a lot of people say that might be his best individual regular season ever. The opportunity Russell Westbrook had the year when KD left, before Paul George got there, where he leads the league in scoring, averages a triple-double, and puts his team on his back. Hell, we can go back 25 years. The opportunity Scottie Pippen had the year Jordan retired the first time, when he gets the Bulls to 55 wins, to the playoffs, is an MVP candidate. Steph was going to have that opportunity this year to remind everyone that the old hashtag Steph better actually is true. That opportunity has now been taken from him. Maybe the Warriors are better long term because of it, but for Steph, this is devastating.
No, it absolutely is, and for all the reasons that you just outlined, and it was going to be an opportunity for Steph in the context of the super team era to come out and show his individual greatness. He was going to have an MVP caliber season for this team to be competitive in the Western Conference and get into the postseason, but now that's gone away. But we always knew coming into this year that this was going to be a season of transition for the Warriors, just because of all the losses they had this offseason. Losing Kevin Durant in free agency, Klay Thompson tearing his ACL in the NBA Finals, losing Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston and Quinn Cook. Like, you knew that they were trying to replenish the ranks and build some more depth. And with that is going to come some growing pains. But now you have an opportunity for extended minutes for guys like Eric Paschal, for Jordan Poole. So you'll get to see them. And then, of course, you can feature D'Angelo Russell and see if you can continue to develop an asset so that when your team is healthy and ready to win again, you could potentially trade him and bring back a complimentary piece to your core of Draymond, Steph, and Klay.
And just real quick, that's such a smart point about D'Angelo Russell, because when they did the sign and trade for Durant, it was not because they thought D'Angelo Russell was part of the long-term future. Mm-hmm. It's, you have an asset going out the door. Can we bring an asset in that we could then flip for players that actually fit with Steph and Klay coming together? So it's a great point by you.
But Nick, even though it's a small sample size, it's four games, we haven't seen MVP Steph Curry. They were down 29 points when he got hurt. The team was already struggling. How much of this now falls on, this is what we talked about all week, the pressure on Sean McVay to do a lot without very much. How much now falls on, I know you're laughing, Steve Kerr to say, hey, it was easy the last couple years when I had a stacked team. I don't have that anymore. Let's see what I can do without him.
Well, Steve Kerr talked about it after the loss to the Clippers. He said this is going to be a new reality for this team. Now, I think he was referring to how it was defensively and allowing the Clippers to score 140 plus points. But when you looked at this team, you knew that it wasn't a championship contending roster. And then based on the moves that had happened this offseason, what the Clippers did, what the Lakers did, knowing the Denver Nuggets are still going to be there, the Portland Trail Trailblazers, the Houston Rockets.
The Jazz added.
The Jazz. It was going to be tough for the Golden State Warriors. So I don't know how much pressure is really on Steve Kerr. I just look at it from this situation. Steve Kerr has got to do he's got to do his work, actually, as a coach now. There's no more Draymond Green drawing up plays on the whiteboard on the sideline in between timeouts. So I just think that he's got to earn his money as a coach. And a big part of that is going to be the development of young talent on that roster.
And listen, we knew that this year there was going to be an element of the Warriors going from the luxury penthouse to, you know, living with the common folk. It now appears that they are, you know what I mean, looking for some shelter. They have dropped down to that level. But some of that has to, we can't say Bob Myers and the Golden State Warriors are light years ahead of everyone and not put on their plate, with or without Steph Curry, how bad of a defensive team this was going to be. We can't talk about Steve Kerr as a all-time, record-wise, great coach and not mention, no matter what the personnel you have, being the worst-ranked defense in basketball is not a personnel issue. That is a motivation issue. That is an effort issue. This team does not have the personnel to be a good defensive team. I'm not arguing
Very small backcourt.
But they... Any team, every single year, that is the worst defense in the league, that is an effort issue. If they were the 23rd ranked defense, now again, it's super early. But they, and here's another effort issue. They've been down 30 in all of their losses this year.
Yes.
31, 42, 34. You mentioned they were down 29 when Steph got hurt.
Yes.
This wasn't a game that just got away from them. I think it was 43-14 at the end of the first quarter to the damn Phoenix Suns. And the Suns are playing better this year. But come on. Like, there is an element of, if for the Warriors, can you do what so many other teams have to do every year, which is get up to play knowing best we can do is the 7 seed. A great season for us would be an amazing season for us would be an upset in the first round of the playoffs. Man, that is the universe. The Orlando Magic, the Charlotte Hornets, the New Orleans Pelicans
every year
have been in for the last decade. And you see those guys playing with a level of intensity that you weren't seeing from the Warriors thus far this year. Now they have, the reason I said it can be a blessing for them, now they have an excuse.
I was just going to write that down. It's an excuse.
Now
exactly
it's like, well, we lost Steph.
Now you can say, well, we lost Steph.
But they were projected to win 49 games this year. Steph Curry was a trendy MVP pick. That can't all be forgotten at this point. But for Steph, this is killer, man.
And
it's
again,
just a killer.
We don't know how long he's going to be out. It is probably a considerable amount of time.
Probably a couple months.
The question before the season started is now the question that remains. Who are the Golden State Warriors? They don't really know who they are yet.
Well, right now, no. Right now, we know. Right now, they're one of the three worst teams in basketball.
Yeah.
No Steph Curry.
Wow.
They're one of the three worst teams in basketball, hands down.
Jimmy G and the Niners defense looking to remain undefeated. But Cardinals rookie Kyler Murray looking to do a lot of defeating. He's got his team playing pretty well lately. Kenny, should the Niners be on upset alert tonight?
I don't think so. I've been looking for reasons to slight the 49ers, and at every turn, they keep showing up. That defense, that front seven,
that
they really get after.
Full.
And the fact that they're able to put so much pressure on opposing quarterbacks and they force so many mistakes from opposing offenses, that's something that you can always hang your hat on. They always say that defense and run game travels. Well, I mean, they're going to be on the road in a short week against the division opponent, but after what they did to the Carolina Panthers and dismantling them this past Sunday, rushing for over 200 yards, having 7 sacks and 3 interceptions, I think they'll be just fine down there in the desert. Now, the one thing I will say about the Arizona Cardinals offense, they don't turn the ball over a whole lot.
And which is impressive, rookie coach, rookie quarterback.
And with a system that we didn't know whether or not could work in the National Football League. So I think they've got a chance to keep this thing close. But in the end, I think the San Francisco 49ers are just a much more talented team. And the way that Kyle Shanahan is calling plays this year, I think he's elevated himself in terms of being one of the best play callers in the National Football League.
Your point on the Niners, on the Cardinals not turning the ball over is an important one. Kyler, 4 picks in his first 4 games. Not shockingly, the team was 0-3-1 in those first 4. 0 picks in his last 4. The team 3-1 in those 4, with the one loss, of course, coming to New Orleans this past week. I think the Cardinals are a good story. I think Kyler, up to this point, he's exceeded my expectations. I was skeptical of Kyler. It was based purely, I profiled him on size. I've never seen a guy that height be successful in this league because nobody has. Not the level of success you would need as the number one overall pick. He has exceeded expectations. And Cliff Kingsbury, a guy, it's not only that he got fired at Texas Tech, but a lot of coaches recently been successful at Texas Tech. It's not like it's a place you can't have some success. He wasn't, so I was skeptical of him. They're better than I expect them to be. But there are certain NFL games that one mismatch is so dramatic, almost nothing else matters. And I feel like the mismatch of the Niners' defensive front to the Cardinals' offensive line is so dramatic, almost nothing else will matter in this football game. Like, it is not often that it comes down to just one thing, but if it is going to come down to one thing, it is the best pass rush in football against an offensive line that's given up the third most sacks in football. Mm-hmm. And some of those might be Kyler's fault running into them, but we know they haven't spent resources on that offensive line. I don't know how the Cardinals can block this Niners front. That's why I would be shocked if this is a one-score game in the fourth quarter.
Here's my question. Never have we talked so much about an undefeated team and spoken so lightly or hardly at all about their quarterback. We don't say anything about Jimmy Garoppolo. Is he a good quarterback? Can he lead this team all the way? I know we talk so much about how great their defense is, but can you just tell me, could Jimmy Garoppolo be the place where the Niners could perhaps, or the Cardinals could maybe make a dent?
Well, listen, you're always going to give yourself a chance if you can force the other team's quarterback into some mistakes. Now, as far as Jimmy Garoppolo goes, the answer to your question, Jenna, is we don't know.
Right.
We don't know. But the team around Jimmy Garoppolo is so good. I think they do a great job of being able to support their quarterback. And anytime you can have the balance that the 49ers have on the offensive side of the ball, you're always going to give yourself a chance. Now, keep in mind, John Lynch made some moves at the trade deadline, bringing over Emmanuel Sanders to help out Jimmy Garoppolo. I think it creates some opportunities for shots in the vertical passing game that this 49ers offense just did not have. I mean, with all respect. With all respect to Deebo Samuels and Pettis and the rest of those guys, I think Emmanuel Sanders is a much more accomplished receiver. And then the fact that you have George Kittle to control the middle of the field and limit the kind of coverages that you're going to face, it's going to create opportunities for those receivers outside of the numbers down the field. So I think that's a way to help Jimmy Garoppolo. But ultimately, this San Francisco 49ers team, I think that they're going to be in the conversation once we start talking about playoff contenders. I don't know if Jimmy Garoppolo is good enough to win playoff games, but I think he's good enough to get them into the tournament.
The reason we're not talking about Jimmy Garoppolo is the question for the Niners is related to their passing game. And when a team's undefeated, you don't bring up the negatives very often. Like,
that's a good point.
He has not played great. By 9 touchdowns, 7 picks, below average NFL quarterback rating for the season. By the way, when people say they don't have receivers, Nick Mullins last year, but at the second half of the season, actually played pretty damn well for a Niner team that wasn't nearly as good. But we're not going to pick pieces apart of an undefeated football team right now. If they start losing, my guess is it will be because of lack of production in the passing game, and that's when we will set our laser sights on one handsome Jimmy.
I didn't say that. I don't see quarterback
handsomeness. You don't see handsomeness?
In terms of aesthetics.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
On to some NBA now. T-Wolves and Sixers battling, literally, 7-footers, Karl-Anthony Towns and Joel Embiid going at it. Haymakers were thrown, eyes were gouged, headlocks were engaged. Both were ejected for fighting. Here's Embiid after the melee.
First of all, I ain't no So, nah, there was not a lot of talking. You were kind of happened out of nowhere. And, I just did what I had to do. Going into the season, I kind of say I was going to try to stay away from all that, but, like I said before, I never start anything. I always react, and I guess he always finds me. But I was built for this city, and that was built for me.
All right, so Embiid took to Instagram to continue the beef, posting, quote, "Great team win. I was raised around lions, and a cat pulled on me tonight." Cat responded by posting the picture of Embiid crying after losing in the playoffs last season.
Well done, Karl Anthony Towns. Well done.
Look, Joel Embiid came out before the season and said, "No more trash talking. I'm going to put my head down and play." I don't know if you would file this under that, but has this act by Joel Embiid worn a little thin to you, Nick?
Well, it's who he is. You didn't totally see it when he was at the University of Kansas, but you saw the beginnings of it. And what Joel Embiid has in his favor, and one of the reasons Joel Embiid can act like this, is he's the biggest guy in every room he walks into. Like Chris Canty, at least the Chris Canty I know, has a very nice disposition. Mm. Like maybe when you were active football player, you were different. But always, everything I've read about you is you've always had, when you're off the field, you've been a nice guy. You're not out there to try to hurt people's feelings the way Embiid seems to be. But you didn't have to be. You were the biggest guy in every room you walked into probably from the time you were 15 years old. And there's an element of, what you gonna do? Like if you're Joel Embiid and you're in the NBA, you're like, what you gonna do? And we didn't post one of his Instagram comments, which to me went over the line. One of Embiid's, where he uses really derogatory, some could even say misogynistic language towards Karl Anthony Towns. And he also mentions Karl Anthony Towns' mother. And I understand his mother is in the stands yelling at Embiid, but these are things.
That's a no-fly zone when you start talking about somebody's mama.
And it is in pro sports, it seems to be a no-fly zone when you start to question another player's manhood, as Embiid did multiple times with Karl Anthony Towns. Now, there's a history here. Remember, Joel Embiid and Jimmy Butler became close on last year's Sixers team. It was Karl Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler that butted heads when Jimmy was with the Timberwolves. These are two of the last true big men we have in basketball. They don't play each other that often, but when they do, they go at it like this. But here's what I know, Canty. You can talk all this trash, but now everyone is going to have you're going to have a target on your back, not only from other players, but from the media. Mm-hmm. And if you have this year a playoff run like you did last year, there's not going to be any Ben Simmons needs to learn to shoot, Brett Brown's rotations need to be better. It needs to be the big bad bully in Philly needs to play better. Because in last year's playoffs, he missed a game in round one. And in round two, when they lost, he gave you 18-9 on 36% shooting. That's not good enough. So I don't think Embiid's going to change, but he is raising the stakes of where his play needs to be for this type of act to be acceptable.
Well, perception is reality. And so, the reality is that based on his reputation, Joel Embiid is not going to get the benefit of the doubt. When you have those questionable foul calls and people are wondering whether it's flagrant, whether it's intentional or not, he's not going to get that benefit of the doubt. Referees are going to hit him, and they're going to say that, we don't believe that Joel Embiid didn't have bad intentions on this particular play. We believe that there was malicious intent involved. And so I think that's something that you have to watch, especially as we move closer to the postseason and those games mean that much more. But in terms of the regular season, I think Karl Anthony Towns is out to try to prove something too. And his teammate Jeff Teague said as much because he wanted to show a little bit of toughness. Everybody knows that he's one of the best young big men in basketball. But there's a question about his toughness. Yep. And you talked about Jimmy Butler was in Minnesota once upon a time, and Jimmy Butler challenged him and Andrew Wiggins, and those guys didn't respond the right way. So I think this was an opportunity for Big Cat to make a statement about who he is and what he's about, and saying that he's not going to allow other big men to push him around or his teammates around, because like it or not, he is the face of that Minnesota Timberwolves team, and he's going to have to be the leader of that franchise as they try to elevate themselves into a team that's capable of playoff contention.
And up to this game, Jenna, Karl-Anthony Towns was playing brilliant basketball. Team was playing really well. He was, again, tiny sample size, but having the best opening to a season he's had in his career.
Earlier this morning, sorry, I talked to Dusty, who's our statistician. He's a big Sixers fan, because I was curious if fans want to see this, the fans of the team. I said, did it make you happy as a Sixers fan to see this? And he said, yeah. I want to see that. Like, I want to see some muscle and grit and some, like, you know, little fierceness when you're out on the court. And this is the team that we picked to most likely go to the Eastern Conference Finals. How much of this kind of personality, what you saw the team come to kind of have his back and defend him? I mean, they didn't lose that much. They lost Jimmy Butler last year. They're still relatively the same team. But how much did that, you know, make you feel like, okay, so maybe they're on the same page. Maybe this could help them in some way.
Well, I like to see the grit and the toughness from teams, especially teams that have championship aspirations. But the one thing I will say is,
what?
Joel Embiid better make sure he's that same guy every single night when he takes on the court. You don't get nights off when you want to establish yourself as the bully, because everybody in the league is going to be looking to try to bully the bully. So if he backs down, then I think that sets the tone in a negative way for his entire team. So he's just got to make sure that's who he is. He's got to be real.
We know that.
He's got to be a real tough guy. He can't be a fake tough guy.
Well, and he can't just be, you know, Twitter fingers turned to trigger fingers.
Exactly.
Listen, you got to. And so as far as it being a positive for the Sixers, the other good video, I suppose, is Ben Simmons in, I'm not a UFC expert, but I think it's a rear naked choke.
That's exactly what it is.
Where you see everyone has his back. Everyone got involved in this.
Real quick, Nick, how do the officials view him as being a peacemaker when he's doing
that? I think the officials we got a bunch of 7-footers throwing haymakers. I don't want to get too close to it. Everyone got involved in this, except for Al Horford, who had the old Danny Glover, I'm too old for this mess. Like, I mean, you let these young folks do it.
You want some too old man? No.
No, not at all. But you're 100% correct that Embiid has made it to where every night, better be ready to be this guy. And it was not the exact same thing, but I remember when LeBron said, okay, I'll be the villain. Now, he wasn't trying to fight people. He's never been that guy. And it exhausted him.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided, and at the end of the season, it all became too much. He had the worst moment of his career in that Maverick series, and he went back to being who he was most comfortable with. Joel Embiid, he likes to make jokes. He likes to poke fun. He likes to be funny online. That's one thing. He's now turned into, okay, I'm the biggest, toughest, baddest in the league.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you might be. It wouldn't be shocking if he wins league MVP this year. But now you have to do it every single night. And you mentioned a lot of people picked him to get the Eastern Conference Finals. Absolutely. Anything short of the Eastern Conference Finals would be an epic failure for this team in the East this year. But if they don't get to the NBA Finals, people are going to come for him. And the one thing that I will not have any time for is Embiid's, man, I never do it. Every time Embiid's in one of these things, he's like, I don't start it. I don't know what happens. Trouble just keeps finding me. You're trash talking online, guys, remember. The way you've conducted yourself, guys, remember. And it's fine because you are usually the biggest, baddest guy in the room. But people are going to be coming for you, and he has to be ready to produce on that level.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.